They're very good players, and yet for them to put themselves out there in front of a national audience in a sport that is not their profession says a lot about them, and I have a lot of respect for them doing that. But I also think it's going to lead to a lot of fun, because we're going to have some failures out there. We're going to hit some bad shots, especially those guys. Hopefully Tiger and I will be able to cover for our partners. We're all going to hit some bad shots and laugh at it.
That was five-time major champion Phil Mickelson talking about his and Tiger Woods' newest golfing partners, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. That's right. It's going to be a face-off between two dream teams on the course this Sunday for the match Champions for Charity, which will raise $10 million for coronavirus relief efforts. The possibilities for the event are endless. Will Peyton be screaming Omaha from the tee box? Will Brady's six rings affect his grip? Will a rogue Rob Gronkowski take out Tiger on the back nine and steal his golf cart? Today, we break down this one-of-a-kind event with ESPN's resident golf savant Scott Van Pelt, and also discuss what it's been like for him to cover sports in this unique moment. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, May 22nd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Scott, very important question first. Can pro golfers wear shorts? Should they?
I say yes. What's the problem? Like, are people afraid that they're going to look sloppy or something? It's not an issue at all. I mean, we saw it at Seminole with the event last weekend, and it's not a problem at all.
What about jorts?
See, that's a whole other deal stylistically. I mean, what are we doing?
Scott Van Pelt is the host of the aptly named Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt and has covered golf at ESPN for nearly 20 years.
I mean, we're talking about decisions that are far beyond fashion. I mean, if you're willing to wear those, then I think we got to question a lot of things beyond just the jort choice. I mean, I just am realizing I've never had a pair of jean shorts in my life.
Never, not even as a child.
No, and see, I'm so old, I don't think they made them. So, I mean, You know, this is like a generational thing. But I'll say, to my knowledge, I never owned a pair of jean shorts.
It's never too late.
That also is true. But you know what? It's too early to start wearing jean shorts. So whether it's late or early, I don't know, but I'm not wearing them.
Well, speaking about the question of whether it's too late or early to start things, let's talk about sports coming back.
Giddy up.
Scott, the match part two is this Sunday. This time, with the addition of a pair of football legends, Tiger Woods will be paired with Peyton Manning. Phil Mickelson will be paired with Tom Brady. The event will raise at least $10 million for coronavirus relief. Now, there was golf last weekend, as you mentioned, so this is not the official return of the sport. Nevertheless, this is exciting, right?
It is, because Manning and Brady are both good enough to hit shots, but they're not good enough for you to expect them to hit good shots every time. They're also very competitive. They've got competitive pride. They've got a great friendship and history. So do Phil and Tiger. And I mean, it's interesting, and it's the conceit is interesting. And there's just enough of, they might hit a really bad shot that I think people, you know, you preemptively rubberneck, you know, because to expect them to hit it correctly from 1 to 18, like, that's not reasonable. So, yeah, I think it has everything you want.
You said Brady and Manning are pretty good. How good are we talking?
I mean, compared to the average, you know, hack golfer that just is enthusiastic about playing but really not that good, way better than that. I don't know current handicaps. I don't know that, but I know that both would reasonably expect to be able to shoot in the 70s, you know what I mean, or low 80s. So, I mean, that's way better than most people that play golf.
I was actually kind of surprised they agreed to do it, because they're such insane competitors, right? And obviously, next to the pros, they're not going to look great.
No, but I think that speaks to how they're both wired. They're like, the hell with it. Let's go, man. And and we had Phil on SportsCenter, and he said he admired the fact that they're willing to do it, since this isn't what they do. And I appreciate the sentiment. But again, I think we all know that person, Mina, and maybe we are that person, that all you have to do is just give them that, you won't do it, right? And then it's like, okay, whatever you just told me I'm not doing, we're 1,000% doing. And if Peyton were in and then Tom was like, then Peyton be like, are you kidding me? Or vice versa. So, I mean, I think all of that's in play here.
What is the actual format of the match and how do you expect that to factor into the entertainment value?
I know there's some sort of modified alternate shot, which will be, that's actually a fascinating idea because for those that, say you're a casual observer of golf, when they play in the Ryder Cup, let's say you and I are on the same team, it's Mina and Van Pelt, and you tee off, now I've got to hit your second shot. Well, that ramps up the pressure on you exponentially because you're thinking, I don't want to hit it somewhere where Van Pelt's got no shot. Same deal with me. I don't want to put Mina behind a tree or, you know, whatever. So you're so stressed about not wanting to let your partner down. I want to say the back nine includes that. But when I was reading about this, honestly, I was more interested in where are they playing? Tiger's home course. How much money are they raising for charity? It's a ton. I think it's easy to get cynical and go, well, what are they being paid? Look, they're not turning up for free, but like, does it trouble you that they're making money? It doesn't trouble me. They're raising money to help people. And I honestly, I don't know the specifics of the format. I think I might be a best ball to start and then the alternate shot. And that's where it gets most interesting.
You mentioned this is Tiger's home course, the mm-hmm. Medalist Golf Club in Hobestown, Florida. Did Phil have anything to say about his home field advantage?
Oh, sure he did. It's always needling with the tongue in cheek. He's like, well, I mean, I wanted to play wherever. And Tiger's like, it had to be on his home course.
He was the one that was so insistent that we go to his home course. I beat him in Vegas and he didn't like that. It still pisses him off. And I understand. Me too. He was insistent, despite everybody else wanting to go elsewhere, that we go to his home course at the Medalist Club, which is great for Tom and I. It gives us an opportunity to give him a memory that he's not going to like every time he shows up at his home course.
Listen, I think what we just saw with Jordan, membership has its privileges and being the GOAT has its privileges. I mean, when you're Tiger, you can just say, nope, I'll play here. I'll play at my place. And what's everyone else going to do? Go, no, I really want to play at my place. I mean,
but they're all GOATs. This is GOATs hurting. They could say that.
Phil Mickelson, he's got no claim to the GOAT head to head with Tiger as it relates to their sport. So Tiger's going to win that tug of war. And I mean, but Phil is, I give him a ton of credit. I think he has evolved over the years to the point where he's incredibly cocky, but in a fun way. And he's also got self-awareness and is self-deprecating about, look, we can count, right? I've got five. He's got 15. So how, when it comes to majors, so we're not going to, if we're going to get into the bookkeeping, I'm not going to start running my mouth too much.
I think for a lot of people, this event is appealing, not just from a live sports perspective, but from an entertainment perspective. I mean, these are four incredibly famous athletes mm-hmm. who we don't really get to see that much. I mean, their personalities will be on full display. You've spent time interviewing them. What do you think the dynamic will be like?
That'll be interesting because Phil owned up to the fact that when he and Tiger played for $9 million, you know, when you get mic'd up, you're kind of, you understand when you put a mic on what you're meant to do, right? Like you're supposed to kind of give a little commentary here. Oh, we got to hear the zingers. Well, they got back there and they're playing for big money and nobody said anything. Well, then it gets boring. So I think these guys recognize that they're expected to provide a bit of the commentary. Now you got Charles out there. You got Justin Thomas out there. It's a fun dynamic of broadcasters, and there'll be plenty of people to mix, stir it up. But when it gets down to it and it gets serious, I don't think it'll be a whole lot of BSing. And the same way it is with your buddies if you play golf. And I have, you know, friends that I'll play with, and I mean, you talk until it gets serious, and then, you know, you grind it out a little bit more. So I would expect it to be fun until it gets serious.
I mean, Tiger Woods is arguably, next to MJ, whose competitiveness we just saw on full display, one of the most competitive athletes in the world. I can't imagine he's not going to start taking this seriously at a certain point.
I'm sure he will. I've always compared Tiger to Michael, Mina, because everyone likes to win. Very, very few people despise losing the way we saw Michael explain it in The Last Dance. And look, golf is a sport of you mostly don't win, except for a period of time where Tiger won at an unprecedented P- case. So he was able to channel that sort of single-minded, I want to win, and make it so, unlike anyone we've ever seen. And this is different. This is for, you know, just for fun, but not really, because you don't want to have Phil talking crap to you about losing another one of these things. So yeah, I know he'll take it seriously, because he's got pride and he'll try to win, because if you're keeping score, he's going to try to win.
Scott, people will be watching for the golf. They'll be watching for the entertainment. Some will also be watching because they might have a financial interest in the outcome. As you know, the world of sports gambling has suffered for options lately. We're looking at Taiwanese hoops, Russian ping pong, esports. You've been known to dabble in some wagering. Who's your money on to win it all?
I would take the underdog, just because it's a coin flip to begin with. I tend to almost always take underdogs. Phil and Brady are underdogs. I just take them because in a coin flip situation, I want my get back to be more than I'm risking. But you know what else I'd say, Mina? Like, if you've been on the sidelines for the last couple of months, if you've managed to not bet on Korean baseball and ping pong and NASCAR, like, you're not obligated to have action. That's my favorite thing about all of my fellow degenerates, is like, I always joke about this when the football season starts. You're not obligated to have action on every window of the college season. You don't have to have all the nooners hooked up in a 9-team parlay, all the 330s in a teaser. You just don't. Now, you do have to have the Hawaii game, just because. That's the rule. You have to have something on the Hawaii game. Otherwise, what are you even doing? You wait all year. You wait all year to stay up until 3 a.m. to see if you can hit the over. But beyond the Hawaii game, you don't have to have action.
Right after the break, let's talk about the PGA's plan to start golf back up again, and also what you've learned from the last 2 months of covering sports when there are no sports. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Scott, televised golf returned last weekend with a charity match at Seminole with some of the aforementioned taboo shorts. I think for fairly obvious reasons, it seems like golf has a stronger chance of approaching normalcy amidst all of this. What is the status of the sport right now?
Well, they're going to try in June to get back out there. And frankly, I felt like they could have gotten out there sooner, like now. And it troubles me that I feel like you have to couch anything you say, because if you say, and I said this on SportsCenter, like anything I say that is framed towards let's open things up, let's try some stuff, it turns into you don't care if people die. That's not what this is. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that from all that we're learning about this and how we get it, being indoors is really bad. Being quarantined in a place with people can be the way that it transmits most easily. What I'm getting at is the PGA Tour, LPGA, you're outside. You can give each other all the space in the world because you're outside. Like, you're not sitting in an office next to somebody. You got all the, like, you stand on this side of the tee box, I'll stand over here. Now, you and your caddy are going to be in close proximity. You got to try to, you know, figure these things out. Maybe people are wearing masks. it's hard to do that. I mean, even here, we wear masks. I've got my bandana that I wear here all day and my mask, and I switch them up and I wash them and the whole bit. I mean, I'm trying, based on what I understand, to do the best I can. And I think that the players on tour can do the same thing. Across the country, golf courses have opened up. And it seems to me, again, based on the little that I understand, but I'm trying to learn as much as I can, that golf ought to be able to be outside, give each other some room, and let's see how it goes.
Let me ask you about that, because not the golf thing, but what you said about covering this and talking about it. Because the biggest story right now is how and whether sports can come back. And people like you and me, who are not scientists, find ourselves wading into discussions not about box scores and highlights, the things we'd normally be talking about right now, but public health. How do you even approach that?
I try to be as educated as I can. I make it clear that what I understand is not certainly what the experts do. I think I'm, and this is just me talking as a person who's innately curious about things I don't understand. I defer to science. I defer to the experts. One of my best friends, my roommate in college, is a physician at Mass General. He is a big time baller, man. I couldn't be prouder of him. He is far more important than I am. And we lived together at Maryland, and he got great grades and I failed out, sort of. Anyway, I've asked him, like, what do you understand? What are you learning? And it's fascinating to hear the blind spots, and we're getting some idea about this, but we're still trying to figure out a lot. And what I've learned, Mina, is that the people who are out there truly on the front lines don't understand it either. They're learning more, and we know vaccines, et cetera, all these things are down the road, that they're aspiring to get to that place. But in the short term, you know, they talk about the fog of war. It feels like there's that we have the fog of war as it relates to this. There is so little that is truly known. And then it becomes incredibly political. And people that want to open it up, turn it into the liberals. And the people that are on the liberal side, I think anybody that wants to do anything that's even slightly aggressive, then you want everyone to die. I don't think either side of that is reasonable. I think that the truth probably lies in the middle. And I don't know that we know the truth.
All I'll say is, if listeners took a shot every time I've said the word uncertainty over the last 2 months, they would be dead. That's about where we're at.
So don't do the uncertainty with Mina Kimes game.
I just need some synonyms. Lack of clarity.
I'm working on, we're going to put a jar in our conference room where we sit. And because basically I just do a talk show now. And I'm, from now on, every time I use the word curious with a guest, I have to put a dollar in there. Because I keep saying I'm curious about, and so I've come up with, I'm interested in, I'm wondering, help me understand. And then 25 times a night I say curious, and I want to poke my eye out with a pencil.
Well, this is going to be a tough one then, because I got a question which I think invites curiosity.
Okay.
Sports are coming back, but they're not the sports you would normally be covering right now. The NBA in the beginning of the baseball season. No, Scott, it is NASCAR. It is German soccer. It is UFC. What has it been like paying attention to these events that we wouldn't otherwise be covering to such a great extent right now?
Mina, in these uncertain times, look, I am very, very honest with my audience. I'm not a huge fan of the word transparent, because it feels like it's a fancier way of just saying I'm telling you the truth. I don't know anything about Bundesliga. Okay, I know very little about NASCAR. I mean, I know the names of the drivers and things of that nature, but is it something that I'm paying attention to typically? It is not. UFC is wildly popular. I have tried to educate myself about the people who matter. I learned long ago how to say Khabib Nurmagomedov. I understand. Cool. I
smoked it.
Well, he's a big deal, and I don't pay attention to that as something that is on my radar if everything else is going on. Like, oh, Friday, I got to watch UFC this. We're covering them, but I'm not going to position myself as understanding it, which is why we'll have Brett Okamoto or Ariel Helwani on. And I'll say to them, I mean, I'll ask very plainly, help me understand why, okay, Conor McGregor just wants to sort of tweet this into existence that he's going to kind of jump the line and get this fight. I don't feel like that's reasonable, because the last time I saw him, he got his ass kicked by Nurmagomedov. Mm. When I don't understand something, I want to turn to the people who do. so that I can learn more. And if we're going to end up covering Korean baseball, and that is something that is hugely significant, then I'll turn to somebody that understands it so I can understand what I need to tell people. What I always care about, Mina, is context. When we do European football, right? It's incredibly popular. If the Premier League's on, I'll watch it. I don't have a team. Actually, wait, I do. James Corden told me I need to be a West Ham fan. So I'm like, fine, I'm a West Ham fan now. So when I talk about these things, I want to know the context so that I can explain to my audience what the context is, understanding that there are people who know the context are just going, I know that, but a lot of my audience probably doesn't. And I don't assume a lot of our audience knows Bundesliga. So if that's what we're going to cover, because that's what there is, then I need to know what matters about it. Does that make sense?
It does. It sounds like all of this has aroused a certain emotion in you, a quality. What's the word I'm looking for?
Curiosity.
That's the one. Scott, I know you've been asked this a million times. What's it like to host SportsCenter every night without sports? But I wanted to ask you not how you do it or what the challenges are, but what you've learned from it, how the absence of sports has changed the way you look at sports and maybe the way you'll continue to look at them going forward.
That I was stealing money for all these years, like flat out robbing the place blind. We get to do a really cool thing, in my opinion. Like we do the SportsCenter that follows the big game. We come on after, we get to talk to the people that were involved in the big events to give us the context of what happened, why they did what they did and how they did it, all those things. Even in the absence of the big event, if it was a random Tuesday night and you just put on whatever the night of college basketball and NBA and NHL games or whatever, I've compared myself forever to a waiter. I felt like my job is simply to take the work that's been done back in the kitchen and deliver it to the consumer. That's really my job. But now I'm back there cooking. And I joked with somebody that it's like the television show Chopped, where, you know, you open up the baskets.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, well, we don't have, like, there's nothing, man. We got cigarette butts in this one. We have chewed gum in this one, and we have old dog poop in this one. Make us an appetizer. Well, all right. I don't know, man. So what will I look at when we come back? For the first little bit, it's going to be odd because there won't be people there, and people are going to hate it. They're going to hate the fact that there's no ambiance. They're going to hate the fact the emotion of a big play isn't felt. That said, I won't have to labor as hard, nor will our entire show staff, to try to figure out how we fill an hour. And I want people to hear me. I'm answering this in the context of my job. It's just harder than it was. I'm grateful I have it. I just know when I go back to being able to do games, the resumption of thievery in earnest will be underway.
I just have two thoughts.
Yep.
You can always survive on Chopped if you stay away from the ice cream maker. Just do not go near that ice cream maker.
How do they never learn? There's not enough time.
And I'll, if you want to bet on Korean baseball, I can send you some tips later.
Really? Dinos, right?
I got you.
Dinos. If you've been doubling down on the dinos, aren't you up big?
The dinos have been crushing it, yeah.
You got real intel on this?
I'm a big Lotte Giants fan, but they've been crushing it too.
Get at your boy. I'm over here with nothing to do. My account is dormant. I need some action.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Mina, be well, okay?
Coming up, I talked to the winner of the Madden Bowl 2020, who took home the top prize without ever throwing a single pass. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. A few months ago, we talked about how esports have continued to grow amidst the shutdown. One event that drew widespread attention over the weekend was the 2020 Madden Bowl, a tournament where 16 of the top Madden players in the world faced off after competing in a season that began all the way back in August. The winner was a New Jersey resident named Rydell Brito, who goes by the gamer name Joke. When I heard that he had won without throwing a single pass, I had to have him on the show to explain why. Rydell, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So, for those who do not know, you won this year's Madden Bowl tournament, and you did it without throwing a single pass. Now, I know there's a few reasons for this, but can you explain from a strategic perspective why you did it?
Okay, so we're playing a mode called Salary Cap, and you have to construct a team of 34 players within 1,325 points. Every player has a certain amount of points. So, for example, my quarterback was only 11 points, as in some people's quarterbacks were 132 points. The strategy I used was to basically spend most of my points on defense. So I felt like, you know, offense wins games and defense wins championships. I thought I could run the ball effectively enough to where I would score just enough points to outscore my opponents. And, you know, that's exactly what I did. And when a lot of the players first saw my team, they actually kind of laughed at it and are like, oh, yeah, your team's good in a trolling way. And, you know, they were all wrong. They all used the wrong strategy. And a lot of people did think that the meta was passing the ball. And, you know, I didn't feel that way.
So for those who don't know, the meta refers to what's advantageous or disadvantageous in the current iteration of the game. So in lieu of a quarterback, you had a punter, Tress Way of Washington. Can you explain why in particular you chose him?
Okay, so the reason why I chose Tress Way was because he's lefty. And in Madden, if you have a lefty quarterback and a righty quarterback, they hand off the ball differently. So there could be a defense that stops the run against the right-handed quarterback that won't stop the run against a left-handed quarterback. And in Madden, the most used quarterbacks, especially when you're running the ball, are primarily right-handed quarterbacks. So I knew that I could put Tress Way at quarterback and he was left-handed, so it would give me a different way to run the ball. And he was the least amount of points for punters that was left-handed. Plus, he also helped me because he had more kick power than, you know, all the other punters that everyone else used, because everyone else used a 10-cap punter. So I knew when I was punting the ball, I was going to win the field position battle most of the times because my punter was better than theirs.
Can you explain how you landed on this strategy? What went into cultivating it?
Usually, I go into these tournaments, and since I think I'm good on defense, I spend all my cap on offense. And for this tournament, I decided to just do the complete opposite and just spend it all on defense.
So what did you win?
In the tournament I just played in, I won $65,000, and I won my first belt. I had made 11 of these majors, and I had never won a belt before, so this is the first one I finally won. And I've won $132,500 this year playing Madden.
What does the belt look like?
So the belt is red. It's 12 pounds. It's got, I forget how many rhinestones.
Are you looking at it right now?
Yeah, I actually am. It has Madden. It has Patrick Mahomes on one of the handles of it. On the other side, it says Madden 20 Madden Bowl. And it's great because I finally won one. And I've honestly, till this point, I had done everything in Madden except win one. I made every Final Four. I made every single event this year. I made the Final Fours twice. I lost in the final six once. So to finally win one felt really well.
I know that this win meant a lot to you personally as well. Can you explain who you were playing for?
So at the start of the tournament, I was the number one seed. So I had priority of what jerseys I wanted to use. And I chose to go with the jerseys of the Titans. And the reason why I did that was because one of my good friends, his name was Taylor Robinson, a.k.a. Spot Me Please. He passed away in a mass shooting that happened on August 26, 2 years ago. And I knew that, you know, I wanted to dedicate this tournament to him. So as soon as I ended up winning my group, I tweeted that he was who I was playing for. So it felt good to finally win my first one and then, you know, being able to dedicate it to my late friend who passed away in a tragic accident.
Thanks so much, Rydell.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martine, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Russell Dinallo, Troy Farkas, Bradford Craig, and Blake Foman. I'll talk to you Monday.